The Create and Thrive Podcast, episode 46, The Power of Being True to You in Business, with Jill from Four Strange Women.
Don't worry about what other people think about it. Don't compare yourself to anyone else. And don't really, you know, don't look around and try to be anything else.
I'm Jess Van Den, and this is the Create and Thrive Podcast. A former school teacher, I turned my handmade hobby into a thriving business, and I also teach other creatives how to do the same. My goal is to help you learn how to turn your creative hobby into a thriving, profitable business. So let's get learning. Hey Thrivers, it's Jess here. Welcome to the show for another week. It's great to be here with you. I hope you had a wonderful weekend and a wonderful week up to this point. What have I been up to? Well, last weekend I had the first session of my yoga teacher training, which was fantastic. It was really wonderful. We have three wonderful teachers and a really great bunch of fellow students. We learned how to walk and how to stand and how to breathe, which all sounds pretty simple, but it really, really is so much to it. We had a whole workshop about the foot and anatomy and the, you know, how we balance and how we carry our weight and how, you know, how you stand affects every other part of the body and how you breathe affects everything about you. I know I've touched on that before in the podcast about, you know, how breathing can affect your physiology and your mood and your energy. So it was really, really interesting. And I'm so looking forward to going back for my next lesson very soon. I'm hoping that over, you know, time I can have little snippets of insight to share with you that are from things that I have been learning. And the biggest thing is probably to breathe into your belly. Don't breathe into your chest. Try to have nice deep belly breaths. That's what we were focusing on. Diaphragmatic breathing. So that's what I'm focusing on this week. It's my homework. As my teacher says, it's your homework for the rest of your life to remember to breathe properly. So today I have a wonderful, wonderful woman on this podcast that I'm interviewing, Jill from Four Strange Women. If you've never heard of her before, go look up her shop, Four Strange Women. I've actually known about her shop on Etsy and her business for a couple of years now, and I use her in some of my teaching as an example of someone whose photography is amazing, but completely not the traditional flat, white, boring, straight background photography. It's the complete opposite, but it works. And there's so much more about her business and her brand and why it works. And, you know, Jill, I think, is a beautiful example of someone who it's all come together naturally. Her business reflects who she is as a person. It reflects what she cares about in the world. And it resonates with a very specific niche of people who also understand that. And she is a perfumer. She has an extremely successful business selling natural perfume online. Yes, selling perfume online. Who would have thunk it? But it's the reality. How does she do it? Well, we dive into that a little bit more, obviously, in this interview. So I won't natter on anymore. I think we'll just get right to it and you can learn exactly how she's created such an amazing brand and business. And there's a lot of good stuff in this episode. So enjoy. So I'm here today with Jill from Four Strange Women. Jill, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Jeff.
So, you know, I have kept an eye on your shop for a long time now because I think you're doing an amazing job. But for those of my listeners who've never heard of you, can you just tell us a little bit about your creative journey and what it is you create now?
Yeah, I make natural perfume. It's all made from plant ingredients. Everything comes from an aromatic material from nature. So when I combine them, it really has the ability to take you to a place or a time that you've been to in your actual life, and not so much the synthetic perfume world where there's just completely new types of scents being made, and a lot of them are toxic and give you headaches. I came to where I am now because I really was trying to cut out toxins from my life. My mom has an autoimmune disorder. There's just, I see a lot of sick people around me all the time, and I've been trying to avoid it. So it started about 15 years ago, I would say, that I really started becoming aware of my health and my environment. And I've always been really creative, wanting to make everything that I see. So it really just kind of naturally came from me loving scent and perfume, but me also being like, man, I can't wear this stuff. And how can I make it so that, I love, what I'm wearing and that I feel good about it. And so it started just me making my own scents out of essential oils, and then learning that there's all different types of plant extracts that I can use to combine into this. And so I came from like a varied background of art, but one of the things I did was audio design, and I did a lot of experimental music. So recording audio really like made my ears just acutely attuned to just the most subtle things. And I've realized that I use a lot of that in perfume making. I've taken that knowledge and applied it to scent instead of sound, and it works in a lot of the same ways. So yeah, that's been really fun.
That's really fascinating. A few things I want to touch on there. One, the whole, scents giving you headaches. Like when I walk into, we have a department store here called Maya, and there's like a perfume section. And whenever I walk in there, I just want to die because it's just horrible. I want to get through there as fast as possible. I think a lot of people can probably relate to that overwhelming chemical smell thing that happens with traditional perfume. And the other thing I want to touch on is you make perfume and you sell it online very, very successfully. I think that's something that people wouldn't necessarily think you could sell well online because people can't smell it before they buy it, right?
Exactly. I mean, you can see things online before you buy it, and that makes sense. But to not be able to smell what, and that's essentially what you're buying is the smell. It does seem really weird.
So can I just, can we dive into that? And how do you evoke that scent, or how do you work hard to help people understand what it's going to smell like before they get it?
Well, okay, there's a couple things. For one thing, I really try to make my descriptions mean something. It's not just supposed to be pretty, like, ooh, everything's abstract and ethereal. It's actually very concrete the way I create my scents, and they're based on real things, and they're based on life, and they're based on memories and the emotions people have associated with those memories. And one of the things that I specialize in is actually like comfort scents, and I use scent as a way to comfort myself. I'm just a very sensual person. I wear all natural fibers, and I feel like everything I touch, everything I feel has to feel like nice and soft. And so I really seek comfort out in every aspect of like what I'm doing. Like I try to surround myself with a comfortable surrounding. So I definitely try to do that with perfume, and I try to really evoke that through words and through photography and just through every single thing that I do with the design. Even the labels, the packaging, I have letterpress printed, which is hand printed, and they have a texture to it, and that texture is really nice. And it's on a cotton type of a label, and it's not just a mass-produced item. And so I kind of like go through every detail of what I'm doing and say, what about this, says like this is natural. If I'm using like a bunch of plastic materials in my packaging, it doesn't really finish the full thought that this is a natural perfume. And when someone doesn't even get to smell the perfume in person. You know, you really have to get that message across in every single way possible that this is how this is going to make you feel when you're wearing it or when you're smelling it, not just when you're seeing it and reading it about it. So I have to be very reinforcing through every aspect of how I present it, and be accurate about it too. I have to really give a concrete example, such as, you know, this smells like moss and decomposing leaves and mushrooms and, you know, and black tea and like all things that people are familiar with. Yeah. And then, you know, describe it as this is an autumn forest scent. Things are dying, but it's still nice. You know, there's rain and there's bark on trees that have been soaking in the rain. And yeah, so it's kind of, there's definitely a place and a time. It's not, you know, most of the perfumes really have a place for me. Like they remind me of somewhere I've been or, you know, something I've done that they're not just made up blends that are nice.
Yep. You know? So, yeah, you really kind of are connected with the, you know, scent is our probably our most powerful sense when it comes to evoking memory. So if we link a scent with a memory, it's extremely powerful. So you're kind of evoking that feeling of memory and a location or an experience in people's lives that they can relate to when they smell the perfume. And your writing's very evocative, but your photography, I've actually used your shop for a couple of years as an example of how you can have an incredibly successful shop with amazing photography that is not white background, boring photography.
Yeah.
You know, you are the complete opposite of that. Your photos are warm, there's lots going on in them, which is usually a no-no, but it somehow works. And they're very evocative. So how did you come to that sort of photography style? Because it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. You know, I've always kind of used photography as a means to an end in the past. It was always, you know, oh, I need to take a photo for this or this. And then one day I just started playing with it and realizing, like, this is really nice to just go in the woods and take photos for a day. And, you know, I developed my style just kind of based on every other aspect of art that I've done. Mm-hmm. And it expresses what I'm trying to say in exactly the same way. And I mean, I've never really had training in photography, so I really was surprised that my style developed as well as it had, you know, and that I was able to do what I wanted to do with it so easily. I guess it just came naturally. But a lot of what I try to do is make the shadows my friend. I really love my camera and my lenses that I use, and I feel that wrapping shadows around objects in just the right ways and then also catching light in specific ways is what I really use to my advantage.
Yeah.
And I'm also, I really like to have all natural materials again in the photos. If you look at them, there's nothing in them that's really typically man-made. You know, a lot of it's wood and crystals and just a backdrop of, or, you know, there might be something metal, but I try to always create a little bit of contrast, but not too much. And I try to really show the product and not show the background, but the background kind of hugs the product. So
that's a great way of putting it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. and I stick with a pretty neutral color palette. I never get any too crazy with color. You know, my whole house and, you know, everything that my studio, everything is, it's kind of funny. Everyone, you know, that knows me knows that I have a certain color palette that I dress that way. Like I really have 5 colors that I always use for everything. So that makes it easy too.
Yeah, definitely. And I love this, what you were saying about your photos. You know, everyone listening, go look at her shop because it really, talking about it doesn't do it justice. But you know, like you also evoke what the perfume is through obviously the background you're using in some way. So, you know, I love the Winter Kitty photo of the little cat paw and the astral projection on the crystal and the clove with the cloves in the background. And it's so subtle, but, you know, it's just done so well that I think it really evokes, you know, draws people in and goes, oh, that's what that's all about and gives a feeling
Thank
to
you.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes it more fun.
It definitely. So let's just backtrack a little. You were talking about, you know, you started this journey as for yourself and your family. How did it become a business? Was it intentional or did it just kind of evolve?
You know, I was working as a graphic designer, mm-hmm. And I had like a normal job for a couple years. And I wasn't used to that. I was used to always just being an artist, you know, and but I had been out of college for a year and I'm like, okay, I should really try to get a real job. And so I did that for a couple years and I was so miserable. There was no way I was going to be able to do that for like the rest of my life, or yep. even 2 years was too long. Mm-hmm. So because before that, I always had like part-time screen printing jobs or something like that before. And so I was trying to do the full-time, you know, corporate job type of thing. And it just, I was like, I have to find something else, or, you know, and I started looking around and I had friends working in advertising and I'm like, I can do that, but I don't think I want to. I don't want to end up in that world. So I quit my job only 6 months after starting Four Strange Women on Etsy.
Wow.
And I really took a leap of faith because I wasn't making enough money to really, you know, replace the job that I had. But I was going in a lot of directions at once. I honestly didn't know what was going to stick or what was going to work for me at first. But I started doing a lot of things. I made an iPhone app called the Cat Translator, where it was me meowing in every way possible, and it sounded like a cat. And I mean, that did pretty well. It's not on there anymore. But I was making websites. I was working on a documentary. I was, you know, I was kind of just going every direction I could, yeah. just to see like what stuck.
Yeah.
And I'm so creative that like, I was like, I can do anything. What should I do? Should I be a photographer? Should I, you know, should I do graphics freelance? I don't know. But, you know, so the Etsy shop was just one of many things that I discovered. And I was like, Etsy, this is cool. What should I make? perfume, you know? And I didn't really think about it. There wasn't a business plan. There wasn't like a whole lot of planning of products. I had like one or two things that I had made that I started with that I just stuck in a shop, like, you know, absinthe lip balm. Okay, I can make a batch of that. And that's how it started. And so I really didn't know that it was going to become so big. I didn't know that I would be doing it 7 years later. And it wasn't something that I had planned to grow to this level, but it did. So it worked. And I just kind of followed it because people responded to it so well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And I think it's often what happens with people. Like, it happened to me, same sort of story. You know, I was doing it as a hobby and then just life circumstances conspired and I threw myself into it a little bit more and never really intending to go full time. And then it just kind of kept going and growing. And I was like, okay, well, let's just follow this path and see what happens.
Right.
And it was thankfully the right decision, but you never really know, you know, that it's definitely going to work.
A lot of people like psych themselves out because they think, oh, I have to have this perfectly planned and it has to be like just what it is in my mind from the beginning. And, you know, that's a lot of time and money. And like, I don't know how you're going to like, there's no way I could have put my shop together the way it is now 7 years ago.
No.
It took this long to build it to this point. And I mean, you know, if I had like investors and, you know, like everything, like that would have been one thing, but I just didn't go that route. I was very like, we'll just see what happens. And I just played with it. It was a game and it took off and it was good.
I treat it like a game too. It's kind of, it's exciting, you know, taking the next step and reaching the next level. And I think what you said there is really important about, you know, you can't get it all right first time. And the only way you're going to be super successful straight away is if you have some sort of like massive influx of cash or something. So you can actually pay to get all the expert stuff done. But that's okay.
And like a team of people. Yeah. Like I did everything myself. I made my own websites over and over. I had to start from scratch, new websites. You know, it's like if I had a team of people working for me from the beginning, that would have put out a lot of work on my end.
But then it would be your baby, exactly how you want it to be. And that's a beautiful thing about working, I think, by yourself. You have that
creative control. That's definitely why it is exactly the way it looks right now. So that's the benefit for sure.
That's it. So what has been for you the biggest challenge you've overcome so far in your business growth?
You know, There's been a lot of them. I don't know if there's been any one biggest, but I feel that I keep getting big pushes to expand, mm-hmm. and big pushes to, like, you know, be a bigger business than I am, just in general. And I've been resisting it and resisting it, and I'm never quite ready to take on the expansion that's placed upon me. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple times where I have kind of stepped up and I'm like, okay, we're going to expand a little bit, but that's really what I struggle with. And I'm continuing to struggle with is, yeah. Being in between a very small little independent, you know, one room, two girls. And then, well, this could be bigger. Should it be? And what are the consequences? And what, you know, what does that mean for everything if I were to expand it? And I need to be less afraid of that, I think. But so far, that's been the biggest challenge.
And that's, I think that's a stumbling block that a lot of people come up to. I know it's happened with us as well. And I know people who've reached that point. And, you know, success can be its own challenge. Because you're like, mm-hmm. well, I'm this little business, one or two people, and I'm suddenly getting more orders and more press or whatever. But do I really want to grow? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, people feel this pressure, but it's your baby and your business, and you can do whatever you want with it. So I guess the question comes down to, in your gut, you know, is that what you want with your life? Do you want it? And I mean you, but also obviously everybody listening, is that what is going to make you happiest, or I guess make you feel like you're a success? So that's the challenge, right, for people reaching that point of success, is where do you draw the line in expansion? Right.
And yeah, and I've done almost no advertising. I've done, you know, there's a lot of things. I don't do wholesale. I say no to wholesale, like, every day. People are asking me, like, sell to my boutique, and I'm like, no, or I just don't answer because I don't know what to say right now. I'm like, there's no way I can do that right now.
Yeah.
Every once in a while I'll add a boutique and they have no idea how lucky they are. But, but yeah, so that's definitely been an issue for me, and I'm going to try to work on it in this next year. Mm. So
what would you say has been the biggest, I call, fist pump moment, the most successful or amazing moment for you so far in your business?
You know, probably just feeling confident enough in myself to quit my day job. You know, that happened towards the beginning, but that was a big step because that was the ultimate actual reason I started this, you know? And so I was a very early success in that I accomplished my goal, which was to quit my job within 6 months. And so since then I've just been happy, you know, I'm like, I already did it. I already succeeded. What do I do now? There's been some definite, like, huge things that have happened. Like in 2011, Oprah Magazine did an article about me, wow, you know, having changed kind of my whole life around. And that was huge. I was not ready for it.
Oh my
God. Did not have, you know, everything in place that I needed in place before that hit. But, you know, you live and you learn. And I was only in business for 2 years at that point. And last year, Kat Von D posted a For a Strange Woman product that she had ordered on Instagram. And then all of her Instagram followers came over and were like, we need perfume too. So that was, so this past year has been a really big year because that was last January.
Yeah.
So I would say those have been some of the biggest things for me so far.
That's pretty amazing. Oprah Magazine. Oh my God. I can't even imagine. Sort of.
I was like, whoa, I'm not ready for this. Can you come back in 5 years, please? Can't ask that though.
No.
You just gotta go with it.
No, that's right. If you say no now, you'll never have another chance to say yes. So that's the
right
thing.
Exactly.
So, do you ever have things, and I'm sure the answer is yes, because it usually is, are there things that you really want to achieve but you just haven't found the time for because you're so successful and so busy that those things are just kind of constantly in the distance?
Yeah, I mean, there's always just a huge list in my head and on pieces of paper of things I want to do. I've kind of feels like, you know, I just write it all down, and whatever creatively excites me the most is I'm just like, okay, I'll just do that right now. And I don't know if I'll ever get done with all of my ideas.
That'd be boring,
But
wouldn't
I know,
it?
then what do I do? But yeah, I mean, I have learned to take my time and pursue things a little bit more slowly, and but yeah, that's been hard figuring out what it is I'm gonna like, you know, because sometimes you push something aside long enough, someone else does it, and then you're like, dang it, I should have just done that. So I'm definitely, I think there's a lot more natural perfumers out there now. I mean, when I started, there were hardly any. There was a small handful in this country that I knew of. Especially Etsy had like two or three like perfumers. And now it's there's so many, and I don't really look at what other people are doing, and I don't try to compete or keep up with them. But I do know that like the way the universe works, if you don't take your ideas and go with them, then that idea is going to find another person. So I take my favorites and I go with them.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So I noticed when I was looking at your shop just before, you've actually trademarked some of your scents. How did that come about, and how do you do that for those who are interested in doing something similar?
Well, you can't trademark scents,
Right, the
but
name?
some, my scents are so complicated, there's no way anyone's ever going to know how to copy them. that's part of why I can't expand my business, because my perfumes are way too intricate. But the trademark is for the name. And some of my perfume names are very unique. And that's just a measure of protection that I use, because there's any number of things that can happen through Etsy or even off of Etsy with you know, just copyright infringement and other types of issues of people, you know, taking your like I've had all kinds of little things happen, like people take my photos and descriptions and post them somewhere else and charge $80, and then they were buying it from my website for
Oh my
40,
God.
and then like selling it somewhere else for more because those people didn't know it actually existed. You know, there's all kinds of things that can happen, and I especially don't want there to be 10 other Winter Kitty perfumes being sold on Etsy, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, I haven't had to deal with too many copyright issues, but I have had to deal with some with other people making perfume, and that was just one of the things that my lawyer told me that I should do. And so, you know, there's a lot of things you have to like little details, but it's worth it in the end if there's an issue.
Yep, and then you can just come back to that and go, hey, you've got a kind of a leg to stand on when it comes to any issues that might arise. Yeah. It's kind of like having good policies. I always tell my students, have strong policies, because then you can refer back to those and they cover your back. You can always say, well, in my policies I say this. So it's not a shock or surprise to people, even if they didn't read your policies, which, let's be honest, most people probably don't.
Yeah. So trademarking just lets people know, like, hey, don't take this name.
Yeah.
This is mine.
Yeah, exactly. So you have you and you have an assistant, and you actually have a shop front that opens sometimes as well. So how do you actually manage your life? Like, what's your time? What's work time? Is there a definite demarcation, or does it all kind of flow together?
It used to all flow together. My studio was right next to my house before, and I really didn't know when to stop working because of that. I just was always in some, you know, level working. And now my studio that I've had the last year and a half is in the Kansas City Crossroads, which is about 10 minutes away from me. So
Awesome.
I have a little bit of a separation. I can't walk to it in the middle of the night and, you know, make a custom perfume for someone. I have to actually get in a car and go. So that makes it a lot different. My assistant and I work there Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday. And that doesn't seem like a lot. It's like, oh, you got it so good. You only work 3 days a week. And You know, that's true, but I do end up doing work from home or from wherever I'm at, several other days a week too. So those are just the production and shipping and, like those type of days. And then we also have customers that come in because we have a little storefront there too.
Oh, that's so cool. It must be nice to actually see people interacting with your product.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of, I mean, before that I did shows like maybe once or twice a year, but it is a lot better to, and it's weird too because people who buy perfumes in person here gravitate towards almost the opposite perfumes that the online customers do.
Isn't
So
that
that's
interesting?
interesting.
Yeah, I've talked to people and I've noticed that myself, that often what sells in person is not what sells online, which is so strange. But I'm yet to figure out exactly why that is. I'm not
I
quite
think
sure.
because online customers are niche, like they're looking for a specific thing. They're searching for it and they've ordered from you because you're a niche brand or a niche product. And so they order the really weird stuff online. Like the French oak moss and the, like the dirtier, darker stuff. And then in person people are like, ooh, tangerine blossom and floral stuff that, they want the lighter, more general public things because it is the general public. It's not
Your target
your
market.
like hardcore, people that come from everywhere to get something really, different.
That's a
They
really,
just want something.
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, actually. Huh. And it's like, hey, yeah, that's so true. For me, it's different. I think for my business, it's mostly because we specialize in wedding rings, and of course, they have to be custom made to size. So that's not something that you can really just buy at a market stall or something like that. People are more likely to buy our earrings or our necklaces or things like that. Whereas, 80, 90% of our business online is wedding rings. So,
Right,
yeah,
yeah.
looking into that difference between, why things might work in different places. I think it is also important for anyone making the transition from markets and retail to online, because don't freak out if like your what was your best seller in real life somehow is not selling online. Just kind of go with what's working and accept
Right.
it. So, what would you say has been the best marketing move? I know you say you don't really advertise much, but what part of your business has been the most important to your marketing?
I would say expressing myself creatively through social media. A lot of people use social media as, like an advertising platform, and just a way to just, remind people you're there, tell them about your promotions, tell them about, and instead of really doing lots of promotions and doing lots of, like sales and stuff, I have decided to use those outlets as more of a way to just show an inspiring moment of my day. And that's why I really love Instagram, as social media because, that's kind of allowed there. That's what people are expecting there. And the more creative I am, on social media, the better response I get. So, if I find like a, if I just take a really cool photo that has nothing to do with perfume, nothing to do with anything except like, it still works. It still like is a part of me and a part of my brand because I express myself so much through my brand that I feel that, it's almost like a way to be present with all of your customers without being overtly like, "Hey, here's some stuff, buy it," it's more like involving them and also like treating yourself like the artist that you are. Like actually not just focusing on selling, focusing on like creativity and just what you are as a brand, artist, entrepreneur, whatever. That's worked for me really well, I think, because people appreciate that I'm an artist and not just a business person.
And I think that goes back to what you were saying about, that you have your five color palette. You probably surround yourself with wear and are drawn to in life, so that somehow, even when you are, like you said, out taking photos, it's probably gonna feel the same as the rest of your brand, and
It
then
does.
that all works together really well, which is why it's nice to really express yourself through your brand as a handmade business. to the best of your capacity, because then it's just natural. It's you're being who you are and you're sharing what you care about, and rather than trying to make it something artificial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, for those of you listening who haven't seen Jill's shop, I should mention briefly. So you have an Etsy shop where you've got coming up to 30,000 sales now, and you started in February '09, and you have your own website as well. What sort of proportion, if you don't mind sharing, of sales kind of come through those two channels?
So I went a couple different routes with my regular website before I finally did a Shopify site, because as you probably remember, like 7 years ago, Shopify was not what it is now.
No.
And so at first I had like a Flash website, and then like Flash is not supported like the next year. And so I'm like, okay, now I'll have a, you know, so I'm rebuilding everything from scratch again, and I don't have time to be doing that. But I went with Magento, which was, you know, I went on a certain platform of Magento, and they were like kind of Shopify's a competitor that did more like you could adjust it more. You could do more configurable type options. So I went with that. Well, they discontinued whatever platform I was on with them. So a year and a half ago, I finally did my Shopify site, and I love Shopify. And I really wish I had stuck with, you know, started with it, because that's obviously, to me, like the platform that's won out. And it does everything I want it to do. My sales on Etsy, since I, you know, started so much earlier, and that's had, you know, it's just been more consistent from the time I started. And I didn't even have another shop when I had started on Etsy. I have way more customers there. I think a lot of my customers just found me that way, especially like the Oprah magazine. You know, I only had an Etsy site at the time that came out. And so a lot of people had originally found me through Etsy. And I would say still at least 75% of my sales are through Etsy. And the other 25% of my online sales are Shopify. Sometimes if I do limited edition type things, I'll only put them on my Shopify, you know, forstrangewoman.com website, and then I'll get a lot more orders through that. And maybe then it'll be a 50-50 type of a week. But yeah.
Yeah.
Etsy's great. And they really have like a nice built-in social media platform as well. That helps kind of drive extra traffic.
Yeah, and then they've got the shop updates feature now as well. So that's nice, because that shows up in kind of people's screen and stuff when they log in. So
yeah, and they have great SEO.
Yeah.
Like they're, like my, it still comes up Etsy before my regular website, because their SEO is stronger than mine. So and they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point about the return of customers as well. Like, even people who buy, you know, they'll find you on Etsy because they're going to Etsy to look for something handmade, and then they'll just keep buying from you there because it's what they're comfortable with, and that's okay.
Sure.
And that, you know, you'll grow and grow and grow from there. You know, I think having somewhere like Etsy, you know, there are people who kind of shut their shop and then move to their own website, which I think is kind of cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, why would you close a venue?
Right.
It's just a venue that's working for your business. That's my, you know, my feeling. And we're the same, like, because we get great, you know, we've built up our business on Etsy for so long. We have such great search reach there and stuff, and we get so many customers, especially from the States, that we probably wouldn't get through our website, because our website's in AUD and things like that. So, you know, there's always those things to think about as well with having an Etsy site, or, you know, you might these days, if you're starting out, have an Amazon handmade. Not that I've used it, I don't know if it's good or not, but, you know, these things are coming up. And yeah, as you know, you don't just have your own website, for sure.
Right. And I mean, I know it's a little extra work, you know, you have to post the same things twice every time you have a new product, and you have to update two websites all the time, but I've found that it's worth it. I would never drop Etsy, and a lot of people will complain about Etsy and the way that they've changed when they've grown and everything, but I'm like, you know, I think they've done a fantastic job. And they are. They're just a platform. You're supposed to use it to your advantage. And they're not supposed to be in charge of if you get sales or not. So, but it's worked for me just because I feel like I've put a lot into it and I get out of it what I put into it. So.
That is a really great point. So talking about a little bit about business advice, do you have one piece of advice you'd like to give fellow makers about running a successful creative business?
I would say, when it comes to starting, don't worry about what other people think about it. Don't compare yourself to anyone else. Mm. And don't really, don't look around and try to be anything else. I think it's the most successful part of what I've done is that I was doing things that people did not understand it at first. People did not, really embrace my ideas or tell me, that's a great idea, Jill. Like, people were telling me, you're going to sell on the internet perfume that smells like cats that come inside in the winter. And I'm like, yeah. Like, and no one else really got it. And no one else was like, Jill, this is genius. You're going to be a millionaire. Like, I did not get a lot of support. And so you can't expect support from the beginning. Mm. And you can't, you can't really say, well, maybe I should be more like this person and just do what they're doing. I think that would have hurt me a lot if I compromised any of the crazy ideas I had from the beginning. I guess that's good. I guess the question wasn't about starting out, but
No, that's a really good
thing. Yeah.
A lot of people will be starting out or, still in that sort of beginning stages. So I think that's an excellent piece of advice, and you're an excellent person to give it because your business and your brand is such a standout. It's so unique. And I think that uniqueness is what, if you can find it, if you can somehow grab onto that uniqueness that is you and your business and find some sort of it's almost like magic or like blending the right perfume. Mm-hmm. You'll know it when you find it, and it'll make all the difference to standing out amongst all the other people who are doing something similar, but hopefully not exactly the same as what you're doing.
Yeah.
So looking into the future now, and I know we talked earlier about the struggle between do I expand or not. Do you have kind of a vision of where you might be in, say, 5 years' time?
Yeah. I feel like I have gotten to a point after 7 years that this year it really hit me, I think, because we were so busy, I was like, I need more help. Mm-hmm. and so my assistant was like, I'll work more, and I'm like, okay, do you want to take over some of the customer service or something? Because I have been for 7 years answering people's questions and it's starting to get old. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, like, I should have a long time ago outsourced a lot of the, day-to-day grind type of work that I do. But I've kept it so personal, and I'm like, it doesn't need to be this personal, Jill. Like, you need to focus on being creative and not on putting out fires that just some of the people give me some really challenging things to deal with, and I don't need to be dealing with it. So I do think that I'm going to let go a little bit of responsibilities. I'm going to quit being so, controlling over every single aspect of everything. I need to let some of it go. I need to trust other people and their abilities to take my brand and run with it. Mm-hmm. And I would still, of course, make the perfume and design all the products, but I really think that I need to ask for more help. And so if 5 years from now I'm good at asking other people for help, then I do think I'll be able to I want to do weird stuff. I want to have, an earthship or a treehouse or somewhere that I can go for a few months out of the year and just have my own artist retreat, creatively, get away from the city, because I work in the middle of the city, really. Yeah. I did an interview one time for a Chinese magazine, and I get a copy of it, and someone told me, the title of this magazine, like the article that you're in, Jill, it says The Magic of the Forest Fairy. And I'm like, that's awesome, because, you know, it's in Chinese. I couldn't read it. And it was about like me living in the woods. And I remember during the interview, the woman was just like, oh, so you live in the woods? Because, you know, all my photography and everything makes it look like I live in like a fairyland. And I was like, no, I don't live in a treehouse, but that would be really cool if I did, but I don't. I live in a city. And so it was just so funny, because I'm like, you know what, though? This is like totally what I want. I do want an off-grid location that I can go to whenever I want. And I want to be able to create there and come up with new ideas there. And, you know, so maybe I'll get that in 5 years.
That would be very cool.
Yeah.
You can become the forest fairy, finally.
Yeah, I think I need to embrace that a little bit more if I'm going to be, you know, going any further with this brand.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So do you happen to have a quote that inspires or motivates you that you could share with everybody listening?
Okay, I wrote this down. Where is it? Okay, this is from the book The Power of Now, mm-hmm. Eckhart Tolle. The beginning of freedom is the realization that you are not the possessing entity, the thinker. And so I really value freedom. Mm. And that's like the first thing that I use to make decisions for my business and everything else. Mm-hmm. And this is trying to say that, you know, you can be free from like the responsibilities placed on your mind and everything. Mm. If you realize that every like idea you have, everything, all the inspiration that comes to you, it's not yours. Mm-hmm. You're not the one that possesses that, you know, creative energy. The creative energy is outside of you, and it comes to you, and it will go to other people. And it's up to you to just grab some of that creative energy that's out there in the ether and use it. If you believe that every idea comes from you and your ego, then you place too much importance on it, and it stagnates you, and it makes you afraid to pursue it, mm-hmm. because it's you and you're too close to yourself. But if you realize that that is actually an external idea that just found you, then you can just have fun and play with it and see what happens, and not be afraid of failure and not be afraid of anything. You're free, you know, you're free from the responsibility of, you know, oh man, this is me, this is my baby, this is my idea, you know. Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's what that book about.
And you can let it go if it doesn't, if it's not working for you, let it go and know that it'll happen somewhere else, and that's okay.
Yeah,
freedom is my number one motivator in life as well, so I can totally respond to that. So where can people find you online? What is the best place for people to find out more about Jill and Four Strange Women?
I have, well, fourstrangewomen.com is my main website. Mm-hmm. You can find everything from the shop with the products to the blog to, you know, links to a lot of interviews and other types of things. There's maps where you can look through the types of perfume and find which, you know, scent is good for you.
Oh, cool.
There's a couple different interactive types of things. There's information about natural perfume itself in the about section, also about me and Tara, our background, what we do, our studio in Kansas City. There's photos of it and everything that you can look at. And then I would say also, I really like Instagram. That's mm-hmm. probably my favorite, you know, just day-to-day social media, interacting with people, because I feel like I say what I need to say through photos better than words sometimes. It takes a little less of my energy because it's just, it comes so naturally. Mm-hmm. So I love Instagram. I'm on Facebook and Pinterest and things like that, but I do focus most of my energy on my Instagram and my forestrangewoman.com.
Excellent.
And I'm on Etsy.
Ah,
so
of course.
If you're an Etsy shopper. Yeah.
We'll put all those links in the show notes for this episode as well. So that was wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Jill, and sharing your journey and your insights with everybody listening. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I really love that chat with Jill. She was fantastic to talk to and had so much insight from, you know, many, many years of experience and from building a really, truly successful, unique business and brand. Remember, if you want to check out the show notes, see all the links to Jill's shops and social media, head on over to the blog, createandthrive.com, look for episode 46 of the podcast, and all of that information will be there. I will be back next week with another episode. Until then, have a wonderful week. Get out there, create and thrive, and bye for now.